my liege.
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Welcome, everyone, to CITR 101.9. You're listening to Wise Men Radio. I'm your host, Austin. I'm broadcasting live from the unceded Musqueam Territory on the UBC campus. Thanks, everyone, for joining me today. We've got a cool show for you lined up. It is currently 9:03 a.m. on March 24th, 2017. What a day to be alive. I see the sun is poking out a bit here in rainy Vancouver, but yeah, the weather forecast for today, we're looking like today is Friday, looking like a sun and mix of sun and rain, 40% chance of precipitation, mainly cloudy. Tonight, showers, steady temperature near 7 degrees. Throughout the weekend, we're looking at a mainly cloudy, around 40% chance of showers. Throughout the weekend here. Saturday, today and Saturday look like are the 2 days to be outside. Both seem like they might get a little sun. But looking like rain for the next week here coming up. Well, what's new? Cool. Today's a cool show. I am going to be talking a bit about kind of like things that go into ideas of conservation and actually implementing at like what goes on while you're actually implementing conservation practices, because I feel like a lot of talk has been about, like, there's a lot of these notions of, like, we should protect, you know, this amount of land. But no one really ever talks about how do you do it. So I'm going to be speaking a little bit on that note. And some cool, like, tricks, I guess, the pros use in order to figure out what to protect and whatnot. It should be a pretty cool show for you. If this is your first time listening to Wise Men, I typically talk about issues in environmental science. So that's been a lot of pipelines lately and a lot of stream stuff, which is a very important part to our natural ecosystems. But today I'm going to stray off a bit and talk about these big picture ideas, kind of, well, we're going to see where it goes from there. I'm going to start you everyone off with a couple songs to wake you up. Well, sort of get you in the good mood for today. I'm going to start you off with a song by David Lauren. He's an artist out of Montreal, and his new album Yen came out this week, and this is going to be one of his songs. Actually, no, it came out in December. I lied. But this is going to be a single off this album, Jen. Take a listen to it. It is cool. I'll be back in about 10 minutes for some words. Here you go. Thank you.
I say into a speaker in the back of my mind, leave it behind. I want to make it feel like you've replied. I am inside a speaker phone that keeps us intertwined, running behind. I try to make you listen, but you run wild. If I wanted to, I wouldn't say so. If you lost your point of view, it's never the same. I'm too lost to stay. It's alright to taken inside, you slip through the cracks as I run wild. If I wanted to, I wouldn't say so. If you lost your point of view, it's never the same. I'm too lost to stay. It's all right to
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
All Access Pass is back for season 2. We are a collectively run weekly program that discusses equity, inclusion, and accessibility issues on and off UBC's campus, including both visible and invisible disabilities. You can catch All Access Pass every Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Anyone can get involved. No experience is necessary. People of all abilities are welcome to join. Check us out on Facebook at All Access Pass or get involved by emailing accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Welcome back, everyone, to CITR 101.9. You're listening to Wise Men Radio, and I'm your host, Austin. We just played a couple songs there. The last song was Cedric Noel. The song was Pinned Under Falling Bridge, or Building, so I'm sorry. And then the album is Under a Fallen Building. and Out the Other Side. And of course, that first song was David Lauren. The song was Jen off his album Yen. Very cool. Too cool. I think they're both from Montreal, too. Cool Montreal artists. So, yeah, I was going to play another song, but it's a pretty big jump between the two. Honestly, it's a pretty big jump with throughout the rest of my set list here, but you know what? I'm just going to play it because, yeah, whatever, man. Whatever. I can do what I want. Here we are, and I'm here to talk to you a bit about things that kind of go into, now, of course, isn't really everything, but it's some of the things that go into the ideas of conservation land management and conservation planning. Because you hear a lot of these kind of big ideas of people saying that, you know, we should protect these species. But how are we, like, you don't hear a lot of action words with that, you know, besides protect, or no one ever specifies how you're going to do that. And I think that's because it's a pretty daunting task to do this. Recently, in the Aichi Act, or Aichi Target 11, stated in the Canadian federal government, stated that increase effective protection of terrestrial ecosystems to 17% in a way that prevents extinction. So this, like, basically what this means is that the federal government wants to ramp up protection efforts on different ecosystems. Basically, they want to be able to create, like, every ecosystem that Canada has, they want 17% of that, the land in that ecosystem, to be protected in a way that prevents extinction. And that's really hard here to do that. It's a pretty ambitious goal, and I think it said by 2020, so we got 3 years to do this. And I think we're at about 7 or 9% last I checked, of a select few ecosystems. And of course, every ecosystem's different, and they, like, for example, ecosystems that are more populated are going to be very more difficult to actually protect. Like, the tundra is an easy ecosystem to protect. Like, very, very little people live up there. It's more or less a more of a cut and dry kind of just section off of land. But, for example, in the coastal Douglas fir CDF zone, that a lot of the lower mainland of British Columbia and I wouldn't say a lot of it, but kind of the coastline of British Columbia and the east coast of Vancouver Island, from Campbell River to Victoria, that is all considered the coastal Douglas fir zone. Now this is a pretty big area of concern. It holds many essential ecosystem functions. It has a lot of biodiversity, and also it also has a lot of kind of variation within the ecosystem itself, being home to Garry Oak ecosystems, being home to Douglas fir forests, and a wide suite of kind of drier species of plants than you would find typically on the coast. So it kind of makes it a unique situation in itself. So this CDF zone is under threat by a lot of different factors. Let me see. There's CDF zone is 48% of the land base is populated by humans. So there actually is, there is not very much wild land, if you will. And very, very few of that, like even less of that land has been, is like prime intact ecosystem. So basically, this goal that the government kind of set for conserving ecosystems, basically, I'm going to talk about how people and decision makers have been kind of trying to go about addressing this issue of conserving 17% of the CDF zone, Coastal Douglas Fir Zone. So basically what we can do is there's a lot of this zone has been mapped, and there's lots of different data for like parcels of land, including, you know, like monetary value, species of birds, species of plants, and whatnot, like temperatures. They've got a wide variety of variables that they have surveyed for, and basically, what a decision making process would go through is stakeholders would come together, decide, you know, what is the most important factors for a forest to have in order to protect it, and people would kind of list off maybe they want old growth habitat, maybe they want wetlands to be preserved, maybe they want like fish and herptiles, which are reptiles and amphibians are included in herptiles. So like they would list off these factors, you know, targets, baseline targets that they want to base their decisions off of, whether they should go about and protecting this parcel of land, whether or not if this parcel of land contains all of the factors that they want. And of course, where the kind of money kind of comes in is conservation organizations like the one that like the Coastal Douglas Fir and Associated Ecosystems Conservation Partnership would do is they would go out and buy parcels of land and basically protect it and like limit. Limit development and whatnot, whatever the kind of mandate of the Conservation Act would entail. So basically it just kind of goes out. Basically, conservation especially in the lower mainland Coastal Douglas Fir ecosystem, it includes a lot of buying land from private landowners, because this land base is like so heavily populated, and there's a lot of like little private islands that are good for different species of birds. They're like relatively intact and undeveloped. These like little private islands are probably good spots to start in conservation planning. That's kind of like the main gist of what I was going to say, right here. Hopefully that made sense. It was kind of a rough go at it, but, basically what they do is decide targets of conservation, whether that's old growth, wetlands or whatnot. And then they'll find using a ArcGIS, a GIS software, they will the decision makers will take a look at the like parcels of land and decide which one fulfills the requirement the most with reducing costs the most. So it's like kind of a cost trade-off. You know, they have a certain amount of budget and they can't go beyond it. So yeah, conservation costs a lot of money. That's what I can say too about that. To address the goal of 17%, I think it's going to be very hard in order to do that. There's not very much intact lands. And you also have to kind of put in the factor of connectivity between every parcel. And is it actually worth, you know, protecting a small parcel of land that is relatively unconnected? There's like maybe a big highway between that parcel and the rest of the group. Is it worth protecting that land? Probably not, because if the species don't have a proper corridor to go through, then I think a lot of the habitat wouldn't be used to the most of its ability, if that makes sense. And also, species that reside there may not last very long. It might be so isolated from the rest of the things that genetic diversity would plummet, and or it probably already is plummeting, and effects like inbreeding would happen. And stuff like that. There's a lot of different factors that you have to think about when deciding to buy these lands. And I think that's why it's such a complex issue in order to do that. And it's whether or not these conservation practices will be necessarily effective. It's not that we can actually, we can rope off, you know, these areas or whatnot, but it's whether or not if it's worth it is kind of a big question that has kind of arisen in the last couple of years, and whether or not these areas are effective. And it all kind of comes back to what are our goals in conservation? Goals kind of define everything, and our values and the values that are us as humans place on to these services, services or other values that an ecosystem gives, whether or not that is like the value of an ecosystem just being there, you know, that's still a value that is created by the human being, if you will. Although this is a very kind of naturistic kind of, that's really, really not a word, but kind of very nature focused. It's important to always kind of examine humans as a part of nature instead of totally divested from nature, because we are and have always been a part of nature and will always be a part of nature. I'll go into that a little bit more later if I have time later on, but I rambled on for a pretty long time here, and I was going to play some more songs for everyone. This next song I'm going to play is a bit spooky, I think. So hold on to your hats, boys and girls, because I'm going to play a song by King Woman. King Woman's a band, I think they're out of like New York or something, but who isn't? They kind of blended the the drone and doom metal genres to create their sound. They took influence from people like Mazzy Star, Grouper, Whirr, Tied to Branches. So people like that. They're pretty cool. But I'm going to play a song off their newest album, Created in the Image of Suffering, very doom metal-y. This is their song, Mana. This is King Woman. I'll be back in a few, but in that case, take care. We'll be right back.
This year's Fun Drive theme is Shape Your Media, and the March issue of Discorder explores what independent media means to us. Cantlit is a podcast that gives a platform to new wave of canlit. We dissect fake news from the perspective of a journalism student. Holy Hum and Angela of Susu question their roles in resistance. And one writer calls out Pitchfork's latest opinion piece, "Does college radio even matter anymore?"
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks to this month's advertisers, Live Van, the UBC AMS, Flex Your Head, the Rickshaw Theater, Timber Concerts, the Spring Record Convention, the Rio Theater, Karaoke Music Video, the Wise Hall, and Neptune Records. Pick up one around town or read online at CITR.ca.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM. With Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
Hey, we're back here at Wise Men Radio on CITR 101.9. You just heard the new single from Girlpool, 123. Very cool song. It is, been listening to it a lot lately. Check Girlpool out if you haven't had the chance. Very cool. And before that, we heard Revere Sound Review. And the song was Rip the Universe off their self-titled album. And, of course, the first song there, a little bit different from the rest. One of these things is not like the other. King Woman, Mana. Cool. Cool stuff. Mana. Yeah, but so today, hopefully, you learned a bit about what goes into conservation process. Now, this isn't totally everything that, you know, goes into conservation planning. But it is kind of like a good overview of what can happen on a planning table. Now, of course, there's a lot of like competing opinions, and different people will value different things. Sometimes it takes a long time to come to a consensus of what are the important values to protect. And oftentimes there's a lot of different stakeholders involved. A lot of times there will be, you know, industry that will be like logging, like the logging industry will be active in the area. You'll have First Nations groups, you'll have communities, and you'll have, you know, a bunch of other, like maybe you have a active fishery and stuff. Yeah, like you'll have a lot of different people competing for different values. Yeah, but in the long run, you know, conservation, everyone's just trying to do their best out there. That's what I've come to realize, you know. Even if it may not be the best, everyone's just trying to do their best out there for the, you know, good of society. At least most people are. So even if they have different opinions, it's hard to be mad at them. Yeah, I don't know. That was like some sort of life lesson your mom tells you. But yeah, sorry for that. But I can be your mom this morning. All right. Well, I was also going to talk a bit about, I was going to talk a bit about kind of, you know, there's lots of different, there's a lot of different, you know, like these values, but there's a lot of different values, yeah, I guess, that go into these parcels of land. And one of the most useful and valuable information, and one of some of the most like up to date and accurate and constantly changing pieces of info is this birding data. And like birds, birds are one of these things that you have a large group of people who are pretty invested in birds. I've just kind of discovered this recently, this kind of realm of society, if you will. But I've been getting more and more into it, just going out and birding. You collect data of basically the species of birds that are out there, and this data is actually, and you can publish, like post it on a website called ebird.org, and all this data is compiled, and it's from, you know, like, it goes back to like the 1970s, and you can see kind of the expansion of certain birds' ranges due to different things. One really interesting example is the example of Anna's hummingbirds. Anna's hummingbirds are kind of there's two different hummingbirds here in Vancouver, and it's Anna's hummingbird and Rufus hummingbird. Rufus hummingbird is more kind of orangey red all over the body, pretty much. And Anna's has a pink face. And Anna's used to not be present here in Vancouver prior to the 1970s. So basically people are thinking, you know, we're thinking previously that, oh, climate change has shifted this this species of birds more north. That's like an initial thought, you know, like, well, our climate's warming, so they could go more north. But if you look at it, it's actually more of a complex issue. Yeah, climate has a little bit to do with that, but it actually has more to do with human involvement on the landscape. And as Anna's hummingbird is a extremely like humans and Anna's hummingbirds are very related. Where you find Anna's hummingbirds, you'll probably will find humans. And this sort of kind of deduction of presence and absence of things can be done with a lot, like different species. Like if you find a pileated woodpecker if you know that there's a pileated woodpecker in this parcel of land, you can assume that it is more or less, there's some old trees there, because woodpeckers need older trees to nest in and to look for, to feed in. But yeah, like all this stuff can be done using birds. But going back to the example of Anna's hummingbird, Anna's hummingbird used to not go past, you know, I don't even think it went as far north as San Francisco until maybe 20 years ago. And now it is the most common hummingbird here in Vancouver. We're starting to see this decline in the Rufus hummingbird populations. No one's really sure if whether it's competition between species or not, or if it's some sort of other factor like climate change or whatnot. But it is a very interesting kind of problem that now these Anna's hummingbirds are more abundant than the Rufus. And this has a lot to do with humans, because the reason, it's actually a really funny reason why they're so abundant here is, you know, prior to the 60s, 70s, there wasn't a whole, I mean, like, our population just kind of started to boom and expand throughout the coast. And people started putting out bird feeders. And these bird feeders were essential winter food for these hummingbirds. So down south in Southern California, there is nectar-producing plants all year round, so these hummingbirds could live regardless if humans are not there or not. But as humans start to expand and keep putting out these bird feeders, they're able to travel from only places containing nectar all year round, to places that have feeders. So basically, in Vancouver winter, the hummingbirds rely on your feeder to survive. Whether that's a good thing or not, I mean, that all depends on your point of view. But if you like hummingbirds, that's always an important reason to thaw your feeder if it freezes. All right. So that's all I'm going to say about this kind of issue today. It's been a very jumpy show today. But I'm going to end it off with a cool song by Girls. And the song is called Hellhole Rat Race off their album. Tune in next Friday, 9 a.m. for more Wise Men Radio. It's been a slice, everyone. I hope to see you then. Stay tuned for Mixtapes with Mick and Mac. They've always got some cool tunes spinning, some cool stuff going on, you know? They're cool people. See you guys next week, and enjoy the song.
Sometimes you just gotta make it for yourself. Sometimes, honey, you just need someone else. And sometimes you just gotta make it for yourself. And sometimes, darling, you just need.